Welcome to the Mom Friends Podcast, where we'll chat about all things motherhood with real life experts and moms. We're your hosts,
Rachel
and Kara Ann. So grab a coffee and throw in some headphones and come relate, laugh, and vent with your two new mom friends.
Welcome to this episode of Mom Friends. I'm here with Kate Borsato, and she is one of my, I say this all the time about you, that you're like my new favorite find on Instagram, because first of all, I just love your aesthetic. But even more importantly, I love the message that you have for new moms. So you're a therapist. Do you want to give a little bit of an intro and tell us a little bit about your background, Kate?
Yes, thank you so much. And it's neat to hear you say that, because I say that about you to everybody else.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I'm glad that the feeling is mutual. So yeah, I'm a mental health therapist. I focus on supporting moms in their transition in the early days of motherhood. So mainly through pregnancy, those first few postpartum years, but also a few years into it as well, because I find, you know, you might have a five-year-old or a six-year-old, and then you're still going through postpartum challenges possibly. So yeah, definitely like a bit of an extended postpartum or perinatal period.
Yeah. And so are you currently working with clients one-to-one or?
Yes, I am. So I live in British Columbia, and the way that it works here, it's similar in the States, where therapists are generally limited to support people in their own state. So in Canada, it's similar for the most part. So I support moms one-on-one in BC, and I actually have a team of therapists that are working with me as well. So as my practice grows, I'm bringing more therapists on board to help moms one-on-one. So that's part of what I do, but then I also create resources that moms all over the world can purchase, because I have people reaching out, and it's so frustrating to have to say, I can't help you because you don't live in BC. So the workaround is to create some self-paced digital resources like courses, workshops, workbooks, things like that, to help moms with some of the really common challenges that come up.
Awesome.
Kind of like and what you do in a sense, but for a different.
It's so nice to be able to have that worldwide reach and just hear from all different perspectives, and also hear how similar the experience is no matter where in the world you are.
Exactly. And that's kind of the wild thing, is like, no matter how alone we feel as moms, like I'm sure every mom has been up in the night at some point in her journey and just felt like, what is wrong with me? Why do I suck at this? What's going on? And what I like to remind us all is that probably in that exact moment, there's a web of moms around the globe that are having that same experience with you. Sometimes I like to even visualize that. Like, I get goosebumps when I think about it, because we're kind of all connected in a way. Sometimes we're connected through suffering or through some of our challenges that we go through. But like, for anybody listening, if you feel alone at all, I guarantee that you are not the only one that feels the way you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember as a new mom, that was one of the big things. I was among the first few people in my friend group to have a baby. And yeah, I just remember the feeling of isolation being kind of overwhelming. But I do love to visualize that as well. When I was going through birth classes, my doulas would tell me, you know, when you're giving birth, just imagine all of the amazing, powerful moms that are giving birth at that exact moment. And that was also a really powerful visualization for me. So I love thinking about that as like a broader sense of global community. And so what do you find? You mentioned before you help moms with the most common struggles after having a baby, or even in the couple of years after having a child. So what do you find are the most common things that you're dealing with? Is it postpartum anxiety, depression?
I would honestly say that it's anxiety is probably what I'm seeing the most. And the thing with anxiety is that most of us, you know, even before motherhood, have felt anxious, right? Like, most people can say that they know what that feels like.
Right.
And so anxiety kind of exists on this spectrum. And then when you go through really intense times, like becoming a mom or being pregnant, recovering from birth, and going through all of those massive changes, it's really common for anxiety to just totally spike. So, I mean, depression is really common as well, but especially in this last year with the pandemic and everything that's going on, anxiety is incredibly common. So in terms of numbers, when we look at like perinatal or postpartum anxiety, we're actually talking about pregnancy and the first year postpartum. So that's the general category, because people typically don't just experience one of these things postpartum. It's usually that whole period. Mm. And it's about 1 in 5 moms who would be diagnosed with a clinical level of anxiety. So that's quite high.
That's a lot.
And then
yeah.
during the pandemic, it's probably more like 1 in 3. So it's really, really common.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so I think one thing, I mean, at least for me, is moms don't necessarily know when they've reached that clinical level. So they might say like, oh, well, I'm worrying a lot, but you know, everyone tells me that's normal. Or, you know, I'm having these weird thoughts, but you know, it can't be anything too serious where I need to see somebody for it. Or mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we tend to kind of explain things away, and that mm-hmm. can be really tricky to not know exactly how you know when you've reached that point.
Especially when you hear people say this is so common or all moms feel that way.
Right.
First and foremost, just because many moms experience anxiety doesn't mean that it's something to just tolerate and get on with and not get support. So that's right. The number one thing. The other thing is like that term clinical. So I know I said that. And in the psychology world, we do have these sort of cutoff markers of when something would be considered like diagnosable. Mm-hmm. But the way I work, I don't really pay a whole lot of attention to that. I focus more on at what point does this constellation of symptoms or does this discomfort get in the way of the life that you want to have? So when is it a problem? And this is like the most basic phrase, but I always remember it. It's only a problem when it's a problem. So right. is this causing a challenge in your life? Is this interfering with the mom that you want to be? Is this making you, you know, not be able to sleep or eat or function very well? Then it's a problem. Right. So it doesn't really matter how you score on different scales or anything like that. If it's interrupting your life, like if you're listening to this and you think, gosh, I need help, then get help.
Yeah.
Get help. So it's only a problem when it becomes a problem. So starting at that point. So when I was first pregnant, so my kids are 5 and 6 right now. When I was first pregnant with my oldest, I was finishing my master's degree in counseling.
Wow.
And I had finished all my coursework. I was trying to write my thesis and I could not focus. I couldn't get anything done. And that's when I started to develop these symptoms, which I had no concept of what they were. And I always like to share that because I have an undergrad degree in counseling. I was finished all my coursework in counseling psych, and I still wasn't able to self-identify as having anxiety. Wow. So I felt like I couldn't breathe. I couldn't sleep that well. I was procrastinating to the craziest degree. I went to my doctor because I couldn't breathe that well. I felt like I couldn't get enough air. And I said to her, I have a lung problem. Like I need a lung test. I don't know what tests are out there, but like, tell me what is wrong with my lungs. And she asked me a couple of questions and she's like, Kate, you have anxiety. And she wrote me a prescription for, I think it was Ativan. And I remember feeling like, I don't have anxiety. I'm a therapist. Like it's kind of hilarious.
As if you're immune.
Yeah. And I say that like, it's kind of embarrassing, but I'll say it anyway. You know, I thought I wasn't going to be the one to experience anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I threw the prescription in the garbage and I left and I never really thought more of it, but it didn't go away. Like we can't think our way through it. We can't just like force our way out of anxiety. And so we also know that when you're pregnant and you're experiencing anxiety, you're more likely to experience it postpartum. You're kind of on that path. So you really do need support. You can get off the path with support, but you're unlikely to get off the path if you just push through, which mm-hmm. is what I did. So fast forward, you know, a couple of years, I had 2 babies very close together, 16 months apart. And wow. I was in it. I was in the weeds for a couple of years and finally acknowledged that's what was going on. It was perfectionism. Really, I was unwilling to ask for help. I wanted to prove myself. I wanted to do it all. I wanted to be really good at momming. And I was good at momming. But being good at momming means ask for help sometimes. And that's something that I didn't allow myself to do. So I like to share that just right off the bat, because mm-hmm. sometimes anxiety can show up in your body and you don't know that that's what it is. So most of my clients don't come to me and say, Kate, I have anxiety. They say, I feel like I'm suffocating. I feel like I'm so angry all the time. I feel like I'm snapping and I don't know why. I can't sleep. I'm so scared. I'm like worried all the time. So it shows up in different ways. So for those listening, you might be like kind of tracking your own symptoms and wondering, is that me? So just notice, are there physical things? Like sometimes you know, chronic stomach aches can happen, chest pain, your heart might race often. Sometimes it shows up in your thoughts as well. So often at nighttime when you're trying to fall asleep and your thoughts might start doing weird things and scary ideas might flash into your mind. So that's a really common manifestation of anxiety. So it's a lot of different ways that it shows up.
So you mentioned scary thoughts being one manifestation of anxiety. And I think that one is something that I've seen get talked about a little bit more. I mean, I don't know if it's just because I'm like in this parenting space and I follow so many amazing therapists on Instagram and stuff, but that is something that, you know, I experienced for sure with my first. I had a lot of anxiety with him. And I do remember like the scary thoughts mm-hmm. that would kind of flash in your mind and feeling like, oh my God, like how could I think that?
Yes.
So yeah, do you find that's kind of a common occurrence?
Yes, I do. And I also find it's one of the most disturbing ones because mm. sometimes our thoughts do really weird things and sometimes horrific things can flash into your mind. And then what happens is it creates space for you to judge yourself,
yeah.
especially if you have really weird thoughts, right? You might think, what is my problem? Why did I think that thing? And then what happens is it just adds fuel to that fire. And
yeah.
when we judge ourselves, when we criticize ourselves, that actually drives more anxiety. It actually does. Like we can measure your nervous system activity. And so this is real. It's not just like a be nice to yourself sort of nudge. This is like
right.
real stuff. So why don't I talk to you about the main categories of these scary thoughts. So we call them intrusive thoughts in the psych okay. world. And it's because they're like intruders. They just flash into your mind. So first and foremost, nobody wants to have scary thoughts. Okay. So if anybody listening has weird things pop into their minds, like you didn't choose that thought, right? Your brain just offers things to you. And they usually fall into a few different categories. These categories kind of get more extreme as we go, but I will walk through them because I know some listeners will probably relate to these. And from my perspective, we need to name them, talk about them, put it all out there because the secrecy and the shame about these thoughts is what actually makes them feel worse. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the first sort of level is around sickness, contamination type thoughts. This might've been a big one this past year, especially with COVID. So you might have like an image or a thought or even like a scene play out in your mind where your baby or your child gets COVID and what happens. And your brain might just like go down that path of possible outcomes. So that's the first level. Second one is around injuries. So these are like accidents, falling mm-hmm. down the stairs, getting in a car accident, things like that. So most people will relate to the example of like driving down the street and maybe you just have this thought, like, what if I just turn my car into oncoming traffic? Mm-hmm. Have you ever had that thought?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I have too. And years ago I thought I was nuts. Like, why would I think such a thing? But yeah. then the more I say it out loud, people are like, oh my God, you have that thought too.
And right. Yeah. I used to cross, I was working across the Golden Gate Bridge. I live in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And my son would commute with me to go to daycare. We started when he was, you know, a few months old. And I used mm-hmm. to think that all the time, like what would happen if there was an earthquake and I just like plummeted to my mm-hmm. death with my child. And like, just these scary things just would pop into my head all the time. And it was awful.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop them.
Oh yeah. That is so hard. That's so hard. And I think, you know, everybody would relate to this. I live on a big island, Vancouver Island on the west coast of Canada. And we take the ferry back and forth to the mainland. Mm. It's a massive ferry. It's like a cruise ship.
Right.
But since I was a little girl, I remember being out on the deck and thinking, what would happen if I just like launched myself over the edge?
Mm-hmm.
That is an intrusive thought. That's not a suicidal thought. That's not a disturbed thought. Like there's nothing wrong with me. It's actually an anxious thought. So these are anxiety driven thoughts. They have nothing to do with the actual content of the thought itself. It has to do with anxiety.
Wow.
But again, as a 10-year-old, I didn't know that. I was like, what is my problem?
Right.
So, okay. So let me just move through these a bit more. So the third category, it's kind of ramping up in difficulty. This is violent thoughts toward your child. So this idea, you know, sometimes we imagine, what if I fell down the stairs with my baby? Some moms might imagine, what if I threw my baby down the stairs? Or in the middle of the night when you're in the throes of baby sleep, which I imagine you hear mm-hmm. clients sharing with you, of like that yep. intense frustration and desperation, and you just want your baby to sleep. And maybe you have this flash of throwing your baby or putting a pillow over your baby so you don't have to hear them. Or what if I just left and never came back? Right. Mm-hmm. So that can be a thought that enters your mind as well. So for those listening, like, this might bring up some discomfort hearing some of these things, and just notice it. And trust me when I say that these do not indicate that you are a bad person or that you're a bad mom. These are anxiety-driven thoughts, okay? The fourth category is the hardest one, I think, for moms to sit with. And this is sexual thoughts about babies. And again, they don't choose these thoughts, but you might find that maybe during co-bathing, like you've talked about co-bathing recently, I think, or mm-hmm. Diaper changes, or just like you're being naked around your baby a lot, you might have a flash of a disturbing thought that is sexual in nature. So maybe when you're breastfeeding, it makes you feel a bit weird, or you might have a sexual feeling or a sexual thought, and then that might scare you. So of course, you can understand why these thoughts are difficult, mm-hmm. but the key thing to ask yourself, you might be wondering, like, okay, how do I know if this is actually a dangerous thought or if this is like an anxious thought? It's one question. When you think of that thought coming to fruition, if it were to come true, does that make you feel relieved? Does it make you feel good? Is it something that you want to happen? Usually the answer is a hell no, like hard no.
Right.
And if that's the case, this is just anxiety. It's an awful way that anxiety shows up. If it's yes, if the answer is yes, I want that to happen, it's very uncommon and it's a totally different situation. It's possibly an emergency situation. You need to get support right away. But for the most part, people do not truly want these thoughts to happen. And that's how we know that they're anxiety driven. Okay. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. And it's really helpful to just think about it in like that very clear way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And usually that's why it's so distressing. Like if people come to me and they're like, Kate, I'm having these thoughts, I'm like, this is a good sign. Like, you're distressed by it. That means you don't want this to happen.
Right.
So it's actually like the content is not the problem, that your brain is just offering these scary scenarios to you. And so I often explain how, you know, during this perinatal period, your mama bear brain is fired up. And I think we all know what it feels like when mama bear is like awake and alive. It's when your baby is sick and you're stressed, or when somebody's driving too fast by the side of the road and you get like fired up, you know, it's like mama bear is feisty, protective, and she is ready to show up for her kids. Right. And so that part of your brain is like basically your anxious brain.
Okay.
So when you're little and when you're pregnant, that part of your brain is kind of primed. It's like ready to go. So, you know, even now, like I said, my kids are 5 and 6. I still, you know, we were up in the mountain a couple of days ago in a ski mountain. My kids aren't that familiar with it. I was having all sorts of intrusive thoughts about like them falling in the tree wells, or skiers hitting them, or chairlifts, like all these things. And doesn't that make perfect sense, right? My mama bear brain is like, what about this? What about that? Pay attention to this. And it's stressful, but it all makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be there for like a survival mechanism, right? So that we can anticipate the potential dangers that could happen and mitigate them.
Exactly. And so part of it is like, we just have to learn to tolerate it. You know, like when I'm lying in bed at night and my brain's like, what about that tree well? I have to notice it. So this is where we shift into like, okay, what do we do about these? Because they are really hard to deal with. So our job is to notice and name these thoughts as intrusive thoughts. So instead of me lying in bed being like, oh, what happened if she falls in the tree well? And then what happens? And going down the hole, what if, worst case scenario, I have to name it. Oh, I'm having that anxious thought again. I'm not going down that path. So I have to call it out. And then I have to choose to redirect my energy and my attention elsewhere. Okay. We really can choose. Have you ever had that experience where you could very well indulge in anxious thought, or you could take a different path?
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I went through all four. So there's sickness, injury, violence, or sexual molestation or sexual feelings or behavior toward a child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are the four categories that they typically fall into.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then when we're thinking of like what to do about those thoughts, the process is really naming it, noticing it in the moment, which is mindfulness. Mm-hmm. What are the thoughts, right? Write them down. What are the most common ones that you have? Because usually they come up in themes. When does it come up? Is it nighttime? Is it when your child is being babysat or in daycare, like what are the circumstances? And then we need to try to stop that thought in the moment and redirect. We can redirect by tuning into the moment, right? Okay, I'm laying in my bed. How can I focus on the in the moment? Because your mind can't be in two places at once.
Right.
There's a lot more to it. And so I don't want to like.
No, of course. I mean, this isn't therapy to those who are listening. So you might have to do a little more work than just listening to this podcast.
Yes.
But that's a really helpful place to start. And the fact that you brought up when your child is being babysat, I just thought back to, I mean, even now, like my big intrusive thought has always been around choking. So I have a really hard time when my kids are not with me and I know that they're going to be eating because my son is almost four and I still worry about it all the time when he's not with me. I always just like have this scary thought and like intrusive thoughts of him choking. But I'm going to try that. And I'm going to try like, this is not very likely to happen. I can stop this and think about something else.
Had you labeled it as an intrusive thought before?
I haven't really. I've kind of just thought about it like I think probably like a lot of us do, like I'm just being crazy or, you know, I'm just being like a helicopter mom or, you know, all those different excuses that we give to these things, right?
Yeah. And it's not crazy, right? But like, it's like noticing the themes that come up can be really helpful. So for you, if it's around food, you know, mapping that out, what does your anxious brain tell you when you're not with your kids? What do you feel driven to do? Do you feel driven to like cancel your work and be at home so you can be with them all the time and make sure nothing happens? And maybe you don't, right? Maybe it's just an uncomfortable thought and you're able to get on with your day. And you know what? Yeah. Is that kind of how it goes?
Yeah. Like it definitely doesn't stop me from functioning. Like my son is at his grandparents' house right now and it's, you know, it's fine. So, that I think is an important distinction too, like you were talking about earlier, like when does it get in the way of your life and the way that you want to live your life and the way you take care of your kids. Like, I don't think that I take it to that extreme where I like can't function when he's not with me.
And I think like what you're talking about that there is your ability to tolerate the discomfort. And that's what I teach a lot is, you know, ideally we all want to get rid of the things that feel awful, right? Like I remember going to a therapist once and being like, why am I still dealing with this thing? Kate, you're not going to get rid of it. I'm like, what? So we want to get rid of our stuff that's uncomfortable. But I think part of this journey as moms is accepting that we are going to be worried about our babies.
Yeah, of course.
Like our 5-year-old, 10-year-old, 20-year-old. Like I'm pretty sure my mom still worries about me.
Oh yeah. Same.
And you know, bless all of our mamas and us as moms, like that's just who we are. And so instead of getting rid of the anxiety, it doesn't work. So like, let's not pursue that. But what we want to do is learn how to roll with it, like learn how to tolerate it. Right. So just like you're doing, you're like, oh, I'm uncomfortable thinking about my kids eating. That's a hard moment. Mm-hmm. I can go to work anyway. I can sit with this anxiety. And when I fall asleep at night and I worry about all the things, it's like, yeah, this is what it means to be a mom sometimes. It's not that comfortable. It's okay. I can go to sleep anyway, right? Yeah. Instead of what's my problem? Why am I thinking about this? Why can't I, you know, that self-judgment?
Yeah.
That actually just makes it all worse.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do we tolerate the anxiety? How do we go do the things we want to do anyway, even if we feel a bit stirred up inside?
And I hear from moms about this all the time, especially because I think so much of my audience is a first-time mom and a, you know, relatively new mom in the first 6 or 9 months or so. And they ask me all the time, like, how can I get away? And I'm not a therapist, so I don't usually answer these types of questions except to just offer support. But how can I ever leave my baby with my mom? Or how can I ever leave my baby with my mother-in-law? Or how can I ever do daycare? Or like, how do you leave your baby with a babysitter? Like, I just can't even imagine. And for some moms, they are not even willing to leave their babies with their partner or with babies, you know, other parents. So at what point is it, you know, sitting with it and learning how to tolerate it? And at what point is it okay to say, you're not ready for that yet? Like, you don't have to leave your baby if you don't want to.
Yeah, you know? I love that question. And like, let's grapple through that together. Because I think, you know, first and foremost, our values come into the picture and what we want out of life, right?
Yeah.
If you don't want to leave your baby, you know, with the in-laws or your spouse for the afternoon, like I've had clients say, you know, people keep saying like, take the weekend off, but I don't want to take the weekend off. I want to be with my baby. And I'm like, cool, be with your baby then.
Yeah.
But if they come to me and say, I really need a break, I'm desperate for a weekend getaway, but I can't do it because I'm too scared, then that's a problem, because what they want is to go, but they're feeling like anxiety is keeping them stuck. Mm-hmm. So I think first of all, exploring, what do you actually want? And what are the costs? It's like, what are the consequences if you don't, you know, do the thing? Like if you don't leave your baby, or if you don't take that opportunity to go out on a date, are there costs in other areas of your life? Is this impacting your relationship? Is this impacting your ability to care for yourself? So again, going back to that idea of like, is this causing a problem?
Right.
And what is that problem? And you know, in the early years, I think sometimes we just tolerate the problem for a little while. Like for example, maybe with your audience, sleep deprivation. So, mm-hmm. you know, I personally nursed my babies on demand and made that choice and was incredibly sleep deprived for several years. And so mm-hmm. that was the cost of my choice. At what point does that cost, you know, start to impact my life in a bigger way than the benefit of the choice I'm making?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. And it's going to be so different for everybody.
Yep.
You know, I often, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, I think really is going to resonate with a lot of people listening, because we talk about those things all the time, and specifically the impact of, having a baby on your relationship, if you're in a relationship with a partner, because, you know, lots of moms that are listening and follow me probably, you know, do breastfeed on demand or co-sleep or bed share with their babies. And, you know, that's what it takes for them to feel like they're doing a good job. And that's just what they want to do. And it, you know, in many cases helps with the anxiety to have their babies super close to them all the time. But then, you know, at a certain point, it's kind of coming down to getting in the way of their relationship too. So,
Yeah,
it's just an interesting way to frame it for sure.
Yeah. And I think just sort of checking in with yourself, honestly checking in with yourself, right? Is this actually working for me? Is this sustainable, right? I don't want to leave my child with my parents. That makes me uncomfortable. But what does that mean for the other areas of my life, for my career, for my sense of self, for my relationship? And there's no like right or wrong answer. We just have to be honest with ourselves. And if you feel like, oh gosh, I know I need a change, but I can't do it, then reach out for help. Mm-hmm. You're not the first one to feel this way, and you're not stuck in this forever. So you don't have to figure this out alone, but you do have to be the one to say, I need help and I want this to change. That's your part. But once you reach out, the support is there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I think right now, especially because of COVID, and because there are limited childcare options and maybe limited therapy options for like in-person mm-hmm. therapy and stuff, I think that has been a really big deterrent, or obstacle, I should say, for getting help. How do you recommend moms seek help? Like if they realize, okay, I think I need to get some support here, like where do they start?
That's a good question. It really depends on where you are. So I would say, first of all, because most of these listeners will be on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And gosh, the world has changed a lot. And I think it's good. I mean, say what you want about social media. There's obviously a lot of challenges with it.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of free content out there that doesn't necessarily, it doesn't replace therapy, but it can really help you feel educated and like you have a few tools in your toolkit. So I would... Yeah. Like that's the free, low-cost place to start. So, you know, if anybody's resonating with what I'm saying, come follow me. I've got tons of like YouTube videos, free resources, workbooks, some lower priced programs that are accessible for everybody, some higher investment programs that like help you deep dive into some of these areas. Mm-hmm. So just really depending on what you need. But a lot of therapists out there have similar offerings. So at minimum, a lot of free support on social media and then different programs online. If you're looking for therapy, it really depends on where you live. So my recommendation for US-based listeners is to go to the Postpartum Support International website. So it's postpartum.net.
Yeah, I love that resource too.
Yeah, yeah. So they have a directory and not everybody's on there. Like, I'm not listed on there. You have to have, you know, registered with their certification process and be in that professional association to have those letters attached to your name. So not everybody who's trained in maternal mental health will be in that directory, but it is a good place to start. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I would start there. If you're in British Columbia in Canada, you can reach out to me. So my practice is mostly in BC right now, but I'll be expanding across Canada soon.
Great.
So start there. PSI, actually, Postpartum Support, has a network worldwide. So it's actually not just US-based. So anybody who's out of Canada, start there. If you're in Canada, you can come to me.
I'll link it in the show notes too. Okay. And I think that that is such, you're so right about social media being such a double-edged sword, because Instagram is not therapy, but at the same time, you're right. There's so much free information out there that is so high quality and so great and just an amazing place to start. And if for nothing else, just to make you feel like you're not alone, right? Just to jump on a post of yours and look at the comments and see all of the other people that are feeling the same way.
Yeah. And honestly, I will say, especially for anxiety, because I know we focus on that in this session or in this podcast. The biggest thing to take away is that when you're anxious, your nervous system is activated. It's literally that fight or flight system is in stress mode. So Google this. If you need a little refresher, Google how your nervous system works, Google, sympathetic nervous system, but basically your brain thinks that you're under attack. A crying baby can feel like that. Being sleep deprived can feel like that. Your husband or wife or partner being like, you want to have sex, can feel like an attack on your nervous system. Like, how many moms are like, ooh, you know, it's like, especially in the early days, it's stressful.
Absolutely.
So it sounds kind of hilarious to think of it that way, but any kind of demand on you can actually trigger your nervous system. The only way out of that is to trigger the opposite system, which is your parasympathetic system. That's your calm system. That's your relaxed system. So anything you can do to create more relaxation, more chill time, more ease in your day, every single day is going to be key. So that's where I start with a lot of my clients. So anybody listening, start there. First of all, ask yourself, do I even have a moment where I'm not tending to somebody or something? Mm-hmm. And the answer is probably no for many of you. And so you need to start there. Like, you're not going to reduce anxiety if you don't have any downtime in your day. So be willing to look for it. It's an absolute must. So in terms of free stuff out there, it's like, you know, joining self-care challenges, practicing meditation. There's like a million meditation or relaxation tools out there on the internet, you know, moving your body. So gosh, I know we hear it all the time and I know it's kind of annoying. Sometimes I feel that way too, but exercise and moving your body
is
one of the best ways to reduce anxiety. And it's clinically proven. Like, this is not just, you know, a plug to exercise. And it's not about what we look like. It's just a direct relationship to our mental health. So these are just some
find that ways- one. Yeah, I find that one especially, that one's, I think, charged for a lot of reasons. But I love that one because, you know, that's something that you can do with your baby. So like, really, there's not a ton of excuses to not at least like get out for a walk with your baby. And, you know, you don't need to find childcare for that. Like a bubble bath or, you know, going to book a massage is kind of a different story. Like, those things are great, but a little bit less realistic for many of us.
Yeah.
But yeah, moving your body for at least 15, 20 minutes a day, getting some sunshine and some fresh air, like, it's good for everybody.
And be willing to be creative with self-care. So self-care does not have to happen without your kids.
Right.
In fact, I've done challenges before where it's like a self-care with kids challenge, because that's the first obstacle that comes up, especially now, is like, well, I'm literally never alone. So I guess I don't get to take care of myself. No, find things to do with your child around. It could be like your own music instead of putting on child music. So like, anything that you do that makes your home feel lovely or calming, food, like delicious food. I mean, think of how much energy we put into making like beautiful platters for our children. What if you made yourself like a gorgeous charcuterie board for lunch.
Instead of just eating their crusts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or like half gnawed on carrot stumps.
Exactly.
It's like, no. So it's little things like that. It doesn't have to be a huge time commitment, but just basically adding yourself to the to-do list so that you don't get like the scraps at the end of the day.
I love that. And I love the idea of just like making your home feel a little bit more soothing too. Like I love to like light a candle or put on my like essential oil diffuser or something like that. And it just, you know, that counts as self-care too. Like all those little things that you do for yourself.
It's huge.
Add up. Yeah. It's so huge. Kate, thank you so much for talking about all of this with us. Where can people find you and, you know, your different offerings that you mentioned earlier?
Well, thank you for having me. This has been really nice to chat with you. So I think the best place would be Instagram at Kate Borsato. And I show up there every day and try to support you all in the best way I can. And then on my website, kateborsato.com, that's where you'll find all of my other offerings, YouTube links, blog posts, my courses, things like that.
Perfect. And you have a course dedicated to anxiety coming up soon. Is that right?
Yes. So I have an entire course. It was initially focused on intrusive thought. So if that is something that you struggle with, then I've mapped out exactly how to work your way through that. I've recently updated it. So it is expanded to include even more resources for general anxiety. So for those of you who don't necessarily struggle with intrusive thoughts, but you feel like anxiety is showing up way too strongly in your life, then mm-hmm. this is a self-paced course that can help you through that. Yeah.
Perfect. So I will link all of that in the show notes.
Okay.
Well, thank you so, so much. And everybody make sure that you give Kate a follow because she creates beautiful, but also really, really worthwhile posts that I think will resonate really strongly with you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a joy.
Of course. Take care. You've been listening to Mom Friends. Tune in weekly for new episodes and interviews with us. You can subscribe to the podcast to make sure you never miss an episode. And please leave us a rating and review. Find Rachel on Instagram at Hey Sleepy Baby and Kara Ann at Bloom Baby Wellness.